This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani is dismissing the new U.S. economic sanctions on Iran, saying President Trump is mentally disabled. In a speech Tuesday, Rouhani also said sanctions on the nation's top religious official will do no damage because Ayatollah Khomeini has no foreign assets. And a spokesperson for Iran's foreign minister said sanctions on Khomeini and the foreign minister Javad Zarif would mean the permanent closure of the path of diplomacy. Last week, President Trump threatened military force on Iran, but changed his tactics at the last minute, opting for sanctions instead. The measures are meant as retaliation for Iran shooting down an unmanned U.S. drone that Iran says was in its airspace. The United States says the drone was in international territory. An El Salvadoran man and his 23-month-old daughter appear to have died while trying to make it across the Rio Grande River on the U.S.-Mexico border. A searing photograph now surfacing of the two face down in shallow water highlights the dangers facing mostly Central American migrants fleeing violence and poverty and hoping for asylum here in the United States. The bodies are expected to be flown to El Salvador on Thursday. A total of 283 migrant deaths were recorded last year. The toll so far this year has not been released. Meanwhile, Mexico is stepping up its own crackdown on immigration in response to U.S. pressure, with much of the focus on slowing the flow in the country's southern border. And China is hoping the upcoming meeting between President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping will help build trust and de-escalate the trade war between the world's two largest economies. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who issued a report in April on Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election, will testify in open session before the House of Representatives, Judiciary, and Intelligence Committee on July 17th. The AP's Jackie Quinn reports.
The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee says former special counsel Robert Mueller was reluctant to testify before his committee and the Committee on House Oversight, but agreed to honor their subpoenas. There will be two hearings back-to-back, and lawmakers will also meet with Mueller in a closed-door session. The committee leaders say they wrote Mueller, "The American public deserves to hear directly from you about your investigation and conclusions."
That was Jackie Quinn reporting. The latest exchange of letters between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un may have raised hopes of restarting stalled nuclear talks. U.S. officials say there is no plan for a third summit between Trump and Kim during the U.S. president's brief visit to South Korea later this week, when he'll meet with President Moon Jae-in. Both Trump and Kim have said they are open to an eventual third meeting, even while hardening their stance following a failed second summit in February in Vietnam. Trump is looking for a big deal under which Kim would agree to completely abandon his nuclear weapons. Kim, eager to receive sanctions relief, prefers an incremental approach and has given the U.S. until the end of the year to become more accommodating. The Midwestern U.S. state of Illinois became the 11th state to legalize recreational marijuana Tuesday, and the first to do so through its legislature rather than a ballot initiative. Governor J.P. Pritzker signed the bill into law approved by the legislators.
With this legislation, our state once again is a leader, putting forward the most equity-centric cannabis legalization in the nation.
The new law will go into effect January 1st of next year. Illinois residents older than 21 years will be able to possess up to 30 grams of cannabis flower. And President Trump told VOA on Tuesday that the U.S. was close to reaching a safe third country agreement with the Central American country of Guatemala. An unsigned draft agreement obtained by VOA and presented by a U.S. delegation to Guatemala on June 13th, a deal between Guatemala and the United States would block Salvadoran and Honduran nationals from seeking asylum here in the U.S. Most asylum seekers would have no choice but to file their claims in Guatemala. I'm Michael Brown here in Washington, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Wednesday, June the 26th, and here are some of the stories that we are covering for you this morning. Ethiopia held a memorial on Tuesday for the Army Chief of Staff and four other senior officials killed in weekend attacks. Zimbabwe is hosting the first United Nations and Africa Union Summit on Wildlife. The country is seeking permission to sell its $600 million stock of elephant ivory and rhino horns to fund conservation programs.
We encourage a process where accruing benefits from natural resources are fairly and equitably shared among communities living within wildlife areas.
That is Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa. And the European Union Observer Mission has released its report on the 2019 general elections in Nigeria. More turmoil in the East African Legislative Assembly. The body suspended approval of the East African Community budget after a no-show by ministers from member countries.
We are going to also do our part, but all of them are not here. It shows they are not interested. We are not going to stand here as members and cry more than the bereaved. For the first time, Chair Council is not available to even read the budget. I will even walk out of here out of protest.
That is Susan Nakawuchi, a Ugandan lawmaker, expressing her frustration. More on this story later. In Guinea-Bissau, there is political deadlock as the ruling party, PAIGC, and its coalition partners declared that they no longer recognize President José Mario Vaz. We have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Ethiopia held a memorial on Tuesday for the Army Chief of Staff and four other senior officials killed over the weekend in what the government says was a foiled coup attempt in the northern Amhara state. Hundreds of soldiers and officers in uniform gathered for the ceremony in the center of the capital, Addis Ababa. The coffins of Army Chief of Staff Ciara Makonnen and the retired general, both shot dead on Saturday by Ciara's bodyguard, were draped in the Ethiopian flags. Reports said that roads in the capital were blocked for the ceremony and security was tight. Access to the internet continues to be shut down in the country for the third day. Political deadlock continues in Guinea-Bissau this week as the ruling party PAIGC and its coalition partners declared that they no longer recognize President José Mario Vaz. Although Vaz's mandate was officially up on June the 23rd, he set the date for elections for November the 24th. Vaz and the ruling party, PAIGC, which he came to power within, have been at a stalemate since 2015 when Vaz fired PAIGC party president Domingos Simoes Pereira from the prime minister post. Pereira, who is still PAIGC president, spoke to reporter Ricky Shryok after the party made their Tuesday announcement that they would no longer recognize President Vaz.
In Guinea-Bissau, the Supreme Court is also the constitutional court. So whenever there is a lack of understanding of how to interpret the constitution, that's the body that you should talk. So in this case, we are facing a vacancy on the post of the President of the Republic. So the only institution that can clarify this mess is the Supreme Court.
So the PAIGC and APU, in your contingency, you're no longer recognizing the legal authority of Jomab as president.
It's not only us. The Constitution does not recognize the existence of a man that has fulfilled his 5 years of mandate. It's over.
And how long will it take the Supreme Court to consider that?
No, I don't know how long that will take. Mm-hmm. I know for sure that other institutions can fill the gap as we're waiting for the Supreme Court to pronounce. For instance, the parliament that is in journey now, and the other instances, they can take care of that.
And what was the stance on Macky Sall's interference in the country? There was a lot of people speaking about Macky Sall in Senegal and asking them to kind of stay out of the discussions.
No, I had a chance to be received by President Macky Sall. Of course, a president of a neighboring country is always important. For us, it's mostly important, the relation between Senegal and Guinea-Bissau. I had a chance to share with President Macky Sall this feeling of Guineans, of him being too present in our political situation. So the call that we're receiving today is for the people asking him to play a good role and not be involved in games that will just jeopardize the relation between the two countries and two people. I myself benefit from a very good relation with the man, Macky Sall. We want to have the same opportunity to develop this kind of relation with the president of Senegal. That's the pledge we are making.
Did you guys propose a cabinet over the weekend after he accepted Aristides as prime minister?
After he accepted Aristides and he was sworn in as the prime minister, the prime minister, in contact with all leaders of the party, had a chance to have the final list and submit to him by 6:20 p.m. of the 23rd of June. So it was to our surprise to learn that the president is saying that only today he's about to receive the list. The list was given to the president on the 23rd of June by 6:20 p.m.
And he didn't respond.
It seems to be the case.
That was Domingos Simoes Pereira, president of Guinea-Bissau's ruling party, PAIGC. He was speaking to reporter Ricky Shryuk from Guinea-Bissau. The European Union Observer Mission has released its report on the 2019 general elections in Nigeria. The report concludes that challenges and shortcomings show that there is a need for electoral reform in the country. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos, Nigeria.
The European Union Observer Mission report says the general elections were marred by severe operational and transparency shortcomings. Citing low turnout and electoral security problems, it contains 30 recommendations to improve future elections. Some Nigerian political analysts have been reacting to the report on the general elections held in February and March. Professor Brown Onuoha heads the Department of Political Science at the University of Lagos. He says the report came as no surprise.
Generally, my first reaction is that there is nothing different. We've been in this for long. So of all that I know were written, I have not seen much that is different or that would make any change, you know, as long as you have the same politicians, you know, operating the system.
Onuoha says going forward, Nigerian politicians should change their attitudes.
Politicians must learn how to campaign and win elections for power, not wanting to, this is what they call do or die affair in order to win elections. The problem here is the mentality of Nigerian politician to win, you know, to do or die to ensure that he wins, you know, political power. That's the problem.
Okoro Nathaniel, the convener of We the People's Forum, a Lagos-based non-governmental organization, says the Observer Mission report is correct. He says the law should be amended to fix a permanent date for the election to reduce voter apathy, avoiding problems that resulted from a one-week delay at the last minute this year.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the shifting of the dates of the election. The INEC and the federal government know that many people vote where they register and they do not register where they're living. Some people have changed addresses. When you shift the election around 20-something and people are traveled the first time, they're poor. They can't afford to travel again. So you can discount all those people that are going to travel. They are not going to vote. Then secondly, people have become cynical. Say, we'll do this every time, every 4 years. Nothing is changing. Therefore, why should we bother?
The Nigerian government says the EU Observer Mission did not question the integrity of President Muhammadu Buhari's victory. Mr. Garba Shehu, Senior Special Assistant on Media to the President, says government will work with Nigerians, state institutions, parties, civil society and experts to ensure that improvements recommended by the EU are implemented. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
The East African Legislative Assembly, EALA, suspended approval of the East African Community Budget. This comes after the absence of East African Community Ministers from the five partner states failed to attend the debate on the budget. For more on this story, we go to Moses Javierimana in Arusha.
According to Article 132, Section 7 indicates that the financial year of the committee shall run from 1st July and end 30th June of the next year. With only a few days away, the regional parliament has suspended the approval of the committee's budget of more than $111 million after ministers of member states failed to appear before the chambers, with the exception of Burundi. Susan Nakauchi is a lawmaker from Uganda.
This is their budget. We are going to also do our part, but all of them are not here. It shows they are not interested. We are not going to stand here as members and cry more than the bereaved. For the first time, Chair Council is not available to even read the budget. I'll even walk out of here out of protest. We are debating serious issues. We want some reallocations, and they're not here.
Last week, the East African Community Budget was presented to the Assembly by the Tanzanian Deputy Foreign Affairs and East African Community Minister Damas Ndumbaro, representing Rwanda's East African Community and Foreign Affairs Minister Richard Sezibera, who is the current chair of the Council. This is the first time the chair of the Council delegates a representative to present the community's budget. Adan Noor is an MP from Kenya.
What is more important for the ministers to address than this function of budget, that we can be able to discuss and find ways and means of getting out of this crisis? We are in a crisis. We have to speak the truth. We have to be open to each other.
However, the Speaker of the Regional Assembly, Martin Ngoga, cautioned the members on suspending the budget approval.
We have nothing in the rules that says you must have a minimum number of ministers present for you to proceed. In terms of law, we are fine. In terms of practice, we are not comfortable. So we have to be very careful with decisions we make and how we intend to end them.
According to Article 132, Section 2 on the Treaty of the Establishment of the East African Community, it indicates that the budget of the community for each financial year shall be prepared by the Secretary General for consideration by the Council and approval by the Assembly. Rose Akol is a lawmaker from Uganda.
We adjourn debate on the budget until such a time when the Council is prepared to come and address our issues that we are going to raise with this budget.
The suspension to approve the community's budget comes at a time when the community is facing with the financial challenges and top officials accused of mismanagement of the community funds. Despite the community budget being funded equally by the member states, some countries are yet to send in contributions for this financial year ending next week. Moses Aviarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
And we stay in East Africa, this time in Rwanda, where the country's investigative body, the Rwanda Investigation Bureau, has arrested 15 Rwandans and 2 Kenyans. They are suspected of orchestrating a scam in which they invited over 6,000 people to what they called a wellness fitness event. The suspects had promised that whoever paid to attend the conference would be given free cash amounting to $197. For more on this story, Eugene Iwimana reports from Kigali.
These are among 6,000 people who gathered in the Kigali Radisson Blue Hotel for a conference that was dubbed Health Fitness Event. They explain how they lost their money in this scam conference. The problem is that we paid our money for fake training. We don't know how to get back our money. I paid $5, but there are other many who paid $25 or $105, according to the seat. Coming here, we didn't see the organizers, but Rwanda Investigation Bureau officials asked us to leave this compound and claim for our money after. According to these swindled Rwandans, the organizers of these trainings should teach them how to start and run everyone's project. Every participant was promised a $197 take-home wallet. Janet Luhunga, the Secretary General of Rwanda Investigation Bureau, who immediately came to the crime scene, urges these desperate Rwandans to stay calm as the office is looking for ways to make the organizers pay back the money. Let's understand each other. It's you who gave your money to scammers. They have involved us in this struggle of bringing back your money. So you don't have to protest. Stay calm. But this is a con. that we daily see. It normally happens to one or two persons, but now it's massive. Rosemary Mbabazi, Gwanda's Minister for Youth, says the conference was not known by any government institution. She urges youth not to be blinded by gifts and quickly earned wealth. We want to advise our youth to prevent themselves from free offers and quick richness promises. No one can give you anything for free. What is that mercy we saw among the arrested in Africa? Why didn't he bring that wealth and teachings to his country? This conference was prepared by World Fitness International. It is still not clear how the participants will get back their money. But critics say what is clear is that such scam can always happen, mostly for youth who are suffering from unemployment in a country where youth count over 60% of all Rwandans. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
And from Rwanda, we go to Southern Africa in Zimbabwe. The country is hosting the first United Nations and Africa Union Summit on Wildlife. Zimbabwe is seeking permission to sell its $600 million stock of elephant ivory and rhino horns to fund conservation programs. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from the resort town of Victoria Falls, those living near the game parks have other issues they want addressed.
In some parts of Africa, elephant populations are in decline, mainly because poachers shoot the animals for their valuable ivory tusks. Zimbabwe has no such problem. In fact, the country's parks authority says the elephant population is up to 84,000. That may warm the hearts of wildlife conservationists, but people who live near Zimbabwe's game parks have a different perspective. Gertrude Dube lives in Mansuma village on the edge of Wange National Park, Zimbabwe's biggest wildlife reserve. Her main problem is with hyenas who have eaten all seven of the goats she used to own. But elephants make life difficult too, she says. We love and appreciate wildlife animals, but some, like lions and elephants, are dangerous. When people hear of elephants in the area, even school children fear going to school as they kill, says Dube. This week, Zimbabwe is hosting delegates to the UNAU Wildlife Summit in Victoria Falls, about 2 hours' drive from Wange National Park. Conflict between humans and wildlife is one of the subjects on the agenda. But Zimbabwean officials have a different focus than Dube. Zimbabwe and its neighbors Botswana and Namibia are home to over 60% of the world's elephants. The countries want to end the international ban on trading in raw ivory imposed 30 years ago in hopes of protecting elephant populations. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa says the country has about $600 million worth of elephant ivory and rhino horns in stock, mostly taken from animals that died of natural causes.
If we are allowed to dispose the same under agreed parameters, the revenue derived therefrom would suffice to finance our operational conservation efforts for the next 2 decades. We encourage a process where accruing benefits from natural resources are fairly and equitably shared among communities living within wildlife areas.
That would certainly be good news for Dube and others who frequently lose their crops and cattle to marauding elephants and other forms of wildlife. The 2-day conference ends Tuesday. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe.
And in a related story, but this time in Kenya, where a wildlife conservancy in Kenya is trying out a new use for technology to protect its four-legged inhabitants. It is applying cattle tracking technology to monitor rhinos, one of the world's most endangered species. Sarah Kimani reports from Lake Pier.
The 36,000-hectare Olpejeta Wildlife Conservancy is a sanctuary for endangered white and black rhinos. The animals roam freely, oblivious to the dangers that face them, especially from poachers.
So if I can demonstrate, I have a Martin Protect device with me here. What this device does is it is able to give us real-time data of when...
The conservancy in central Kenya is using cattle tracking video technology provided by a local business in the hopes of saving rhinos and other wildlife. Data is analyzed inside the technology lab at the conservancy, as William Njoroge, the head of technology at the conservancy, explains.
Traditionally, we have monitored those corridors by checking for footprints and estimating how many animals of certain species have moved either in or out. So with the technology of cameras, then we are able to tell with certainty that specific animals have moved in and out because they can be counted.
Ben Roberts of Liquid Telecom, the firm that helped set up the facility, says the technology also helps protect all animals from predators.
They lose about 60 cattle a year to the lions. So if you can if you can track the positions of lions, if you can track the positions of cows, then you can start to predict and help the farmers to make sure that they lose less and they can move their cattle away when the lions are hunting. So these are the sorts of things that can make a difference.
The conservancy spends at least $10,000 every year to protect animals from poachers. It hopes the new technology will help bring down the cost and help solidify its position as a top destination for wildlife tourism, as Samuel Mutisia, the head of conservation at Olpejeta, explains.
It helps in making decisions and linking different sensors together in one platform to make a sober decision, either to prevent conflict, either to look at resources utilization and how they are being utilized in space.
In the last 10 years, Kenya, like many sub-Saharan African countries, has battled poachers who kill rhinos for their horns. There is high demand for the horns in Asia due to unproven beliefs that the horns have healing properties. Sarah Kimani for VOA News, Laikipia, Kenya.
And that's it for this Wednesday, June the 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Ricky Shryuk, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good morning, Africa.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200 and 1500 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Whoa. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Ah. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.